I'd like now to welcome to the show Dennis Carroll. He is a journalist. His new project is a documentary film whose working title is America's Children of the Bomb. It's about the people around the Trinity test site and what they've been enduring over the last six decades. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much.
And I'd like to welcome Tina Cordova. She is a family member of Trinity test survivors and has a great deal to say about that whole subject. Welcome, Tina.
Thank you.
So let's talk about this. It's a subject which, strangely enough, really hasn't been covered very much. July 16th, 1945 was the date of the Trinity test, the first and only test of the atomic bomb before it was dropped on Japan. And while we've had innumerable studies and documentaries and journalism and books about what happened to the survivors at Hiroshima and Nagasaki, there's nothing or very little about the survivors of the Trinity test. There were people living there, and yet the health effects on them has, until very recently, really not been covered.
Absolutely. When you read about the Trinity test, you read about the science, and we know about Oppenheimer, we know about Fermi, we know about the different scientists. You can find out all you want about how the gadget, as it was known, was put together, how many kilotons of power it had. You can find out all about the science, but people, I think, generally don't know about the effects of after they detonated it. It was seen then as a victory, kind of, in the sense that it actually worked. They didn't even know if it was going to work. And so when it actually exploded, everybody was very happy that now this could be used to end World War II. So it had a very positive spin. But unfortunately, there were people, like you say, who lived 10 miles away. And in the communities of Carrizozo and the communities of Tularosa and others there, who were, 25 to 40 miles away, also felt the effects in terms of the radiation from the bomb. And the other point that I could make, too, is not just at the time, when the fallout came down and they were never, nobody was ever advised, maybe you shouldn't drink this water that's got all the white stuff in it, and you shouldn't eat the livestock, and perhaps avoid the crops because they've been irradiated. But nobody was ever told that. And then subsequently, nobody ever came back. In the nearly 70 years, nobody has come back to assess the health of these people and the environmental damage that may have been done. And in the meantime, entire families have been wiped out by radiation, what appears to be radiation illnesses that sometimes don't strike for many years after the exposure.
There weren't even evacuations of that area.
Absolutely. There were no evacuations. The Army had prepared evacuations, prepared to evacuate people, but then decided not to, for whatever reasons.
Well, and I think you when we take a look or consider this whole part of our history, we also have to put it in proper context. In 1945, there were tens of thousands of people living in the four counties adjacent to the Trinity test site. I think there's always been a misconception that there was a very small population of people. That is not true. There were more than 30,000 people living in the adjacent area. And when, as Dennis said, there were plans for some evacuation, the U.S. government was certainly not prepared to evacuate 30-some thousand people. And so while they may have had some plans in place for some minor evacuation, none of that took place. And I think also to put this in proper context, I grew up in the small village of Tularosa, and I can tell you what life was like for people back then. Very few people had any real means of communication. There was a newspaper that was published, I think, once a week, and people had access to the newspaper, but very few people had access to any other means of communication. Obviously, no one had televisions. There were some radios in place. People used cisterns for collecting water. That water was collected for every purpose that you would normally use water for. So for cooking, for drinking, for bathing. The cisterns basically collected the water off the roofs of the houses, and then it went into a storage system that, whatever type storage system they had in place. People grew almost everything that they ate. People still grow a lot of what they eat down there. People raised animals for food. and what they didn't raise for food, then they actually went out and hunted. It was not unusual for people to send out, for example, their sons, and they would send them out on a daily basis because they didn't have much refrigeration either. And they would send their sons out and say, go kill some rabbits for dinner. And I mean, everybody's existence was very simple, and everything, almost everything that they consumed was either grown or hunted or gathered from the surrounding area. So I think that, you know, as Dennis just sort of described, these people ate food that was grown in the immediate area or raised in the immediate area or hunted in the immediate area, and they also drank the water. And then to even compound that process further, Tularosa, the little village where I grew up, has an open ditch system. So everybody used the ditch water that came down from what's the Mescalero Reservation and then further away from Rio Doso. They used that ditch system to irrigate their crops. And so no one was warned in advance. The stories are really incredible that people tell of that day, and I want to get into that a little bit, and I'll explain that in just a minute. But the stories are really incredible that day because obviously it was a total surprise to everyone. And then afterwards, what's even worse is that no one came back and said, your environment now has been changed forever, and you need to take care with how you do everything. Because there are a number of modes by which you can get radiation exposure, and every single one of those was in place at that time. I mean, you can get it just from the absorption through your skin.
Right.
And so, you know, there's a variety of processes in place by which you can get radiation exposure, and the people were exposed to every single one of them. Radiation accumulates in the mammary glands, and so, for example, as a child, I remember going to the local dairy. We would take our milk bottles, they would fill them up with milk, or we would drop them off and pick up new milk bottles and go home with them. My mom would skim the cream off the top of the milk, and we would make butter out of that. And then we would drink the milk product that was left. My grandfather, I distinctly remember on Sundays, I remember my grandfather butchering chickens, and they would make chicken on Sundays. I remember going to the ranch with my grandfather to butcher pigs and cows and goats. And so we had no reason to suspect that any of that was unhealthy. Actually, by today's standards, that would be a very healthy way to live.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
It was very organic.
Everything. I mean, the organic way of life, which so many people, I mean, when we talk about what we'd like the food system to be like and growing local food, and you are talking about that exact way of life that we would like to get back to in many ways for good reasons in terms of earth stewardship. And that is what made the people around the Trinity Test Site so incredibly vulnerable, because if there was fallout on all of that land, water, crops, animals, and so on, it all went right into the people who were living there.
Right. We were all incredibly exposed without any sort of warning from the government that what we were doing, which we believed to be healthy, and it was also just the way of life for us. And not just us, but the people that lived in all the little towns surrounding Trinity. I mean, Carrizozo, Socorro, Truth or Consequences, all of those little communities, everybody lived the same way we were living. Through the years, it became very apparent to me, and I've known this for a very long time, that we have significant incidences of cancer down there. I started to take a look at that and started to explore the best way that I could what that actually meant. And eventually, I worked with a gentleman, or am working with a gentleman, his name is Fred Tyler. He lives in Tularosa. And we started an organization called the Tularosa Basin Downwinders Consortium. And through that process, and we can talk about that a little bit more, but when I mentioned the stories earlier, we've had these town hall meetings where we've invited people to come forward and tell their stories, number one. But also, we've started a process for developing health surveys, because the right thing to do and the proper thing to do would be an epidemiological study where they come back, the government comes back, and takes a look at everybody's health.
Right.
And does a health assessment for everybody that's still there, and then goes one step further and does a sort of a survey of your family history so that they'll know for certain exactly what's taken place. Now, we've never been able to get the government to come back and do that. So we started these health surveys ourselves. And we have hundreds, and this is on a voluntary basis that people have done this. We have hundreds and hundreds of health surveys that people have filled out.
Now, when you look at these health surveys, you see a high incidence of cancer. What do you have to compare it to? In other words, how do you know if it's a higher incidence than places that haven't had radioactive fallout on them?
Well, the interesting thing is that the CDC, there's two interesting things that sort of correlate with this that I can tell you. The first is that the CDC has kept track of numbers for every county in the country. You can go to the CDC website and you can pull up any county and you can look at the incidence of cancer in those counties. The four counties surrounding Trinity, which are Otero County, Lincoln County, Sierra County, and Socorro County, those four counties have as much as 8 times the national incidence of cancer. Now, that is not by accident, obviously.
Right, and there was a rather cynical, if I may say so. I mean, I was looking at the video, Dennis, on your website. We're talking to Dennis Carroll and Tina Cordova about the documentary film to be America's Children of the Bomb. It's about the Trinity test site. There's a rather cynical government spokesman who's saying, well, it was the 1940s. How do you know they got cancer from fallout? It could have been that they were just smoking lots of cigarettes. And so, okay, good question. How do you know what kind of cancers tend to be caused by radiation as opposed to cigarette smoking?
Well, they have, and when she talks about the CDC, she's talking about the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta. And they have a list, there are lists of, I don't know, 27 kinds of cancers that can be associated with radiation. And another thing that Tina has talked about is that family members would, you know, you'd have 5 or 6 kids maybe in the family, and 5 of them would have cancer, and they're all different kinds of cancers. It is, I mean, some kinds of cancers, and I'm no expert on cancer, but will run in the family, breast cancer, different kinds of cancers. But you'll have stomach cancer and brain cancer and thyroid cancer, and you might have it in the same person.
Right.
And so that, you know, in and of itself is you know, very relevant.
Certainly a red flag at the very least.
And also the CDC, in a recent study, they did a 10-year study centered in Los Alamos and centered on the records from Los Alamos in terms of the release of nucleides and, you know, all this really bad stuff. And Trinity was part of the study. And basically the study confirms and the fears and the concerns that the people in the Tularosa Basin have, that, and the study would conclude that nobody ever came back to assess them, and especially there were no studies of dose, how much internal dosage somebody may have gotten from this, and they also noted things such as that the Trinity bomb was only 100 feet off the ground, and it tends to just flatten out, and the radiation just, you know, goes all over the place.
Goes laterally.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it was indeed a test, and what they learned from the Trinity bomb, they applied to the Nevada tests, and they applied before that to the bomb that was dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. That we can't drop a bomb. We need to explode it 1,800 feet up in the air, because it will have more of a blast effect and less of a radiation-induced illness effect. And that's, you know, that's all given the science of 1945. But the other thing, too, is that, I mean, sometimes you hear folks will say, well, they didn't know about the effects of radiation and all that kind of thing. But the atomic bomb was designed to kill people. That was the point of the bomb.
Well, 1945, they knew about radiation poisoning.
Yeah. Right. I mean, there were people who would come out, and the army people or the scientists in hazmat outfits, checking on people around there. I mean, there were ranchers who were just 10 miles away. But, like I said, they were never warned or they were never told about it. And so the CDC also questions some of the statistics that were given out, you know, about where the cloud went and all that, that the instrumentations were certainly not state-of-the-art as they would be today. So a lot of the figures that the Trinity Project was, of course, part of the Manhattan Project. And so some of the figures and the stats on where the cloud went and all this, you don't necessarily aren't able to believe it because of the rudimentary estimations, and if that's such a word, and the instrumentations they had at the time.
Well, and I think also, this also, I keep talking about proper context. This was a nuclear explosion. The documentation that was released after the actual blast said that this cloud went in a northeasterly direction over some of the most unpopulated area of New Mexico. And I always have to laugh to myself thinking, do they really think we buy that? I mean, this was an explosion that went far into the atmosphere and spread in every direction. And we have people who, many people, who tell the story about an ash that settled out for days afterwards on everything. And it was a radioactive ash. It got into everything. I mean, it was not discriminating. It got into everything. It got into the soil. It was on people's skin. It got into their houses. And
if they washed it off, they were washing it off with radioactive water.
Exactly. And there's no escaping that. I mean, to think that this cloud, this nuclear cloud, only went in one direction is insane. And not only that, but there's records that show a few days after the Trinity blast, there was a Kodak film plant in Indiana. And all the film in that plant was destroyed when that cloud finally reached Indiana. And so if it had that effect that far away, you can only imagine what the effect was on the people in those surrounding areas. The La Hadra study, which that's the Los Alamos Historic Document Retrieval Assessment,
when's that?
That's the CDC study.
That's the CDC study.
Which is from what year?
Well, they just concluded it last year.
Okay.
And it was a 10-year assessment. The Department of Energy funded that project, and the project was funded because obviously there had always been concern for the environmental effects from all the work that was done through the Manhattan Project. And when they were looking at that, they said, we can't leave out Trinity because Trinity was so... Trinity was the result of the Manhattan Project. So they took a look at Trinity as well. And what I was going to say and emphasize after what Dennis just brought up is that their estimation, based on the documents that are still available, is that the people probably received 10,000 times more radiation in that one episode than they should have. And that is incredibly significant when you think about it. I mean, 10,000 times more than what's safe.
Than what's considered safe.
Right. And so what it's so difficult for me. I sit here and when I think of that number, I just think this is so difficult to comprehend how the government has turned away from the people in New Mexico for over 65 years and looked in a different direction. I have many times said that we, the people in New Mexico, and especially the people in those communities that were in close proximity, were unknowing, unwilling, uncompensated participants in the world's largest science experiment. And when I say that, what I mean is that the scientists surely knew what they were doing. They were knowing. They were willing, and they were compensated. They knew exactly what they were working on. As Dennis said before, they were devising a bomb that the use of was for destruction. And did they know exactly what radiation exposure meant long term? Probably not. Many of them themselves died from radiation exposure and radiation-induced cancers. But that's not an excuse for what took place afterwards. New Mexico was the first state to have a tumor registry in the country. When we were talking earlier about why do I think that people have cancers in those communities that are radiation-induced rather than from smoking 5 packs of cigarettes a day, there's a reason why New Mexico was the first place in the country to have a tumor registry. The reason for that was because they needed to track what happened after that that blast.
After the Trinity test blast. After the Trinity test blast.
Exactly. They knew also after the Trinity test blast, there are records that are available now. A lot of this stuff is no longer classified. But there are records now where, and I can't remember the name of the physician right off the top of my head, but he was the physician that was assigned to the project, the Trinity test. And his distinct objective was to sort of measure and develop some sort of evaluation of the health effects after Trinity. And he said, we can never do this again in an area that is inhabited like the Trinity area was. And that's why they moved the test to Nevada, and that's why they moved the test to underground tests as well.
I can't help but think of the kind of institutional racism that is involved in making decisions like that, given that it was mostly people of Spanish and Indian origin who were living there.
It's interesting that you say that, because I've had so many people ask me that. Did they just not care because we were Hispanic, and did they think we were, you know, expendable? Did they not have concern for us? And it begs that question. I mean, seriously. I mean, people think that. Some people believe that.
Well, not only that, the fact that they weren't told at the time and of what was going to happen, and they were advised on how to prepare and how to react. But the Trinity Downwinders, the federal legislation through Stuart Udall, who introduced legislation in the 1990s, and there were a series of amendments, they've included, in terms of compensation and of recognition and mea culpas and all that kind of thing, the folks from Guam, the folks from Bikini Islands, the downwinders in Colorado, in Utah, in Nevada, the uranium miners in New Mexico. But the Trinity survivors are never mentioned. In fact, just recently, last month I think it was, there was a resolution introduced in Congress that sets aside a day of remembrance for downwinders. And a part of that says that the first nuclear tests, weapons test in the United States, occurred on January 27th, 1951. So they don't, they are, it isn't that they were dismissed at the time, that's part of it, but they're still being dismissed today.
Is it like a kind of psychological denial or something? What's going on?
See, the psychological, or it's intentional.
Yeah.
And the other odd thing about that is that the sponsors of that resolution were Senators Tom Udall and Jeff Bingaman.
Yeah, they were co-sponsors of that resolution.
Right.
And you know, it's like a cold slap in the face. I'll be very frank with you. I have no way of comprehending how the people in New Mexico and the people downwind of Trinity can be ignored, consistently ignored. And you have to wonder if these sorts of things are not intentional. I mean, I think that there is a fear of opening up that can of worms. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But yet, there has been recognition for more than 20 years of the downwinders from Nevada and from the islanders who were involved in the tests that were done in the Pacific. And yet, not a single... You know, there needs to be recognition of what took place. There needs to be recognition of what's been given up.
Well, which is why Dennis Carroll here is making this film, which is tentatively titled America's Children of the Bomb, and it's about just this subject that we're talking about. And in fact, Dennis, you're trying to raise money to make this film.
Absolutely. And that's one of the hardest parts about it. It's a very expensive proposition.
And it's kind of a downer, and getting funding for it is tricky.
We have a Kickstarter on site, which is a platform on the internet for raising money for all different kinds of things. But and it's Kickstarter.com. And if somebody wants to read about this project and to be able to contribute to it,
and to watch the nice video,
and to watch the video and the background and all that kind of thing, they can go to Kickstarter.com and just type in my name, Dennis Carroll, C-A-R-R-O-L-L, or children of the bomb, America's children of the bomb, in the search, and it will come up.
Yeah.
And it is true, like you say. A lot of the projects on Kickstarter are these fun, happy kinds of things. And so I've been trying to get them to feature ours a little more.
Yeah.
But this is not fun, you know, and so you have to go looking for it a little more.
We're talking to journalist Dennis Carroll and to Tina Cordova. Now, your family and your community, I think you weren't born yet, but you know people who talked about and have talked to people, and there's records of people who remember that day, July 16th, 1945, the day of the blast. What did they say?
Well, what most people say is that it was an unprecedented event in their life. I mean, you can well imagine what it's like at 5:30 in the morning to be sound asleep, although I will tell you, because people back then had a very different lifestyle than we do.
They got up early.
They were already up. A lot of people were already up.
Yeah.
But this was so significant an event that people actually thought that the world was ending, that it was the world coming to an end, because the blast was so intense. I mean, I've had people tell firsthand stories. There's a man who told me a story recently about being outside with his father, and they were actually putting gasoline into an old truck from gas cans, and he said they actually felt the blast wave. But the sky lit up like it was daylight. It was an instant, I would imagine, but long enough for people to become aware of the fact that something major had just happened. And then, like I said, for days afterwards, something fell from the sky that looked almost like snow, but it's July, and it settled out on everything, and no one knew. There was no communication to the people about what any of it was. The word eventually, the newspaper had an article, and the word eventually spread around town that it was an old munitions dump that they had detonated to get rid of all this old, you know, ammunition or whatever, which absolutely was not the truth.
So they were just lied to.
They were lied to.
And Americans never really, and people, especially the people in the area, never knew what happened until after the bombs were dropped in Japan. Then they came back and they said, well, here's what really happened to you guys.
Right. But then even then, I mean, there's the infamous story about one of the ranchers, and the people came to with their Geiger counters to sort of assess the radiation. And he said, what are you all doing? And they said, we're measuring for radioactivity. And he said, oh, there's none of that out here. I don't own a radio. No one had any concept of what radiation exposure meant.
Now, did the results of those tests, people going around with their Geiger counters a few days later, survive?
Most of that data is not available any longer. It's really interesting because they did have men posted with very rudimentary devices to measure radiation. And I'm told that they had them in most of these communities, but none of that data is available any longer. It's disappeared. It's no longer available to anyone so that there can be a real assessment of what happened in, for example, in Tularosa. And the really sad thing is that it's a very sick population now. And what further makes the story so sad is that these are people who are either underinsured, uninsured, and they have no mechanism or means for dealing with the health consequences. I can tell you stories of people who have bake sales to try to raise money so they can get pain medication when people are dying from cancer. I can tell you stories of people who have had more than one cancer and have been through hell dealing with this. And it just is unbelievable to me that our government has looked the other way for so long and has never come back to. I mean, I've said, I had thyroid cancer. I wasn't alive at the time, but I know my thyroid cancer was caused by radiation exposure.
Well, how does that work? So this event happens in 1945, and then how do the effects last over years, decades, generations?
Well, first of all, you have to also remember that the bomb was a plutonium-based bomb, and plutonium has an exceedingly long half-life. We don't know that those communities are safe today. No one can tell me that they are for certain because no one has ever come back to assess that. Have you ever heard of an assessment being done of whether or not New Mexico is safe, environmentally safe? I've never heard of an assessment like that. I know in those communities, I've never heard of an assessment like that.
So in theory, one could measure the radiation in the ground where crops are being planted, for example.
In theory, probably so, and there may be some baseline today that exists, but I wonder how you would ever extrapolate backwards from that point. I mean, when I was growing up, like I said, I know my dad hunted and we ate deer meat. We raised animals and ate them. We had gardens. We had the little town I grew up in, everybody has fruit trees. We canned everything. We dried a lot of things. And so we were constantly consuming things that were grown in the soil, and the soil was contaminated. How do you get rid of that? How do you actually clean that up and say, yeah, now it's safe? I mean, do you dig several feet down into the ground? I mean, I don't know how you do that. I don't know that anybody knows how you do that. And that may be why no one's ever come back to try. But what I can tell you is, when I got thyroid cancer, the first question that they asked me is, when were you exposed to radiation? Did you ever work in a job where you were exposed to radiation? I said no, but I grew up 35 miles the way the crow flies from Trinity. And I know that that's what caused it. And New Mexico has one of the highest incidences of thyroid cancer, and we know that thyroid cancer is caused by radiation exposure. And so this is not just a problem that exists for the people adjacent to Trinity and that live in those communities. It exists for everybody in New Mexico. We should all be concerned about this issue.
Well, as a matter of fact, Tom Udall last year, I think, introduced a resolution. Unfortunately, these things never go anywhere. I think they're sometimes they're done just to appease the folks, and then they go away. But this resolution would, everybody in New Mexico would be classified as a Trinity downwinder. Based, and so they must get this information from someplace to know that everybody living here at the time may have been exposed to that, and everybody and all the cancers that maybe people have now could be related to that.
Well, when you talked earlier, Tina Cordova, about the mammary glands holding radiation, that means that mothers may have been feeding radioactive breast milk to their babies.
Absolutely, absolutely. And breast cancer is one of the 20-some-odd cancers. Dennis has referred to what's called the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act. That act lists the known cancers that are associated with radiation exposure. Breast cancer is one of them. Those are the cancers that people have been receiving compensation for in other parts of Western United States. Senator Udall has for the last 2 years, and so has Representative Lujan, introduced legislation to amend RECA, the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act, to include New Mexico as downwind of Trinity. And the legislation has not moved at all in Congress. Obviously, we need to push harder to get that done. But paramount to that process is this documentary that Dennis is working on. That would tell the story, and that would be something that would give us a national platform so that people really know what we're talking about. I mean, first of all, when Dennis talks to people, when I talk to people about this issue here in New Mexico, so many people are oblivious to the fact that this is going on. And how can you tell the history of New Mexico without actually telling this story? This story is so incredibly important to the history of our state. Our state developed a lot of what we see as industry in our state today, developed around this process, the development of the atomic bomb.
The Manhattan Project.
The continued influence of the Department of Energy in the state of New Mexico.
It's the ugly side, and I think, I mean, one of the things that I personally believe that our country is in denial about is that war is really the worst thing there is. It is ugly and evil, and people die and get sick and suffer in the most horrible ways, and this is one of those ways. How did you, Dennis, come across this whole story and decide that you were going to devote a big chunk of your life to making this film?
Well, that's kind of an interesting way. I had done a story about a reunion of a Manhattan Project scientist and his family. And he was like 93 years old, and they all came back to Los Alamos, and it was kind of one of those, what did you do in the war, Daddy, stories, you know. He said, well, I, you know, helped build the atomic bomb. But then the story came out, and I got an email from Olivia Fermi, who is the granddaughter of Enrico Fermi, who is responsible for creating the first nuclear fission and split the atom for the first time, and was involved in building the nuclear reactors that produced the materials that they needed for the bombs in the Manhattan Project. And so she was wondering where she could get a hold of this gentleman that I had talked to, because she had never met anybody who worked with her grandfather, and he was Enrico Fermi's lab assistant. And then she says, well, I just came back from Tularosa, and they had a big gathering there, kind of a vigil. It was on July 16th of a couple of years ago. And so that's kind of how I became familiar with the project, with that. Plus, I have done stories out of Iowa related to nuclear weapons workers and their problems. And a series that a colleague of mine and I did, we got the University of Iowa College of Public Health to come down and to assess the health of these people. And that's something that's never been done to the people in Tularosa.
Well, and what's interesting is Dennis hasn't, and we should, I guess it's still at the website for the Santa Fe, New Mexico, the article that you did, Dennis, because I will tell you, I have read a lot. I have spent a lot of time reading about and trying to make contacts and trying to do as much as I can to bring attention to the issue of the radiation exposure from Trinity. And the article that Dennis wrote that came out in April or May?
April.
And the Santa Fe, New Mexican was absolutely the best article that's been written.
We'll put a link on my website, santafe.radiocafe.org, to that article.
It would be fabulous, because it is the best article written that I've ever seen that links all the parts and pieces together, the scientific part of this, the health effects, the people side of it, and the article was incredible. And what happened, the way Dennis and I got sort of acquainted with each other is that Olivia Fermi came in Tularosa, the Tularosa Basin Downwinders. We put together a 65th anniversary candlelight vigil in Tularosa to commemorate the anniversary, the 65th anniversary of Trinity. And we invited people to come, and we had people bought luminarias in memory of their loved ones. And we probably had 300 or 400 people there, but it was really incredible, the number of luminarias that were placed. We did this at a baseball field there in town. The number of luminarias that were placed on the baseball field in memory of people that had died. It was mind-boggling to see that in a little... I mean, we're talking about a community of about 3,500 people. And I was telling Dennis one day, do you by any chance know what the normal incidence of brain cancer or brain tumors is in the population? It's 1 in 5,000. And I could easily name 5 people in that little community that have brain tumors. And that, again, speaks to the story of it's not from smoking 5 packs of cigarettes a day.
Right.
My father has had 3 cancers. He had oral cancer. He's not a smoker, never used chewing tobacco, doesn't drink. Then he had prostate cancer. He just recently had a new oral cancer. It's not linked to the first one. And the doctors were telling me this is so incredibly rare. And so my father's cancers weren't caused by smoking 5 packs of cigarettes a day. He has no risk factors for something like this. But he was a child. He was 3 years old when they detonated the bomb at Trinity. And he was definitely exposed. He lived there his entire life until very recently he moved to Albuquerque.
Do you think the oral cancer was related to actually eating and drinking materials?
Well, what's interesting about this is that oral cancer is one of the ones on the list, and it could very easily be linked to, you know, consumption of radioactive materials. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Another aspect of this is that, according to some of the scientists that I've talked to and that I will continue to talk to, the radiation illnesses may not hit for 20, 30 years.
Right.
And you don't get sick right away. And so it wasn't like in Hiroshima where, you know, people were burned to death suddenly. This is, they've been dying slowly over a very long period of time. And so that's one of the things that we will do in the film, is to follow up and find these folks, these experts on radiology, and who can talk about the long-term effects of radiation on the population. And the other thing I want to mention about the Kickstarter campaign is that this is not to pay for the whole film. It's to pay for a specific part of it, which is to develop a more extensive trailer, which can be used to incorporate things that will be in the final film, but it will also be able to be used to help in fundraising as well. So you have to take these, it's such a large thing that you have to take it in steps. The other thing is that this is kind of in this new global village era that we're in now on the internet, and it's kind of a community journalism project, basically. Newspapers, I am so thankful for the New Mexican for all the space that they gave me. They didn't have to, you know, there was basically the front page and then two open inside pages, which is costly for them to do that. And to give me that kind of space for one subject is incredible. And newspapers just don't do that anymore. There's, you know, newspapers hardly have enough reporters to send to school board meetings, you know, much less to take on something like this. So it's a kind of a matter of that we're all connected, and, you know, what happens in Tula Rosa is connected to what happens in Japan and Fukushima with the nuclear reactor there. And we're all citizens of this whole big, small world. And that this is a way that, as I said, it's kind of a community journalism where, through donations and suggestions that people give me, that we can build the story.
We're talking to Dennis Carroll and Tina Cordova about the work-in-progress documentary called America's Children of the Bomb. I think it's also, it underlines one of the big problems that we have in this country is that we don't have universal health care, and people are basically on their own. It would be very interesting if we did have the much-talked-about single-payer system and the actions that the government does with one hand, namely dropping bombs right next to its citizens, and what they have to do on the other hand, namely take responsibility for it, were part of the same system, but they're not. And it goes back to the question of who's expendable, who can we just forget about?
Well, I've said many times it would be useful for the government just to come back to those communities and do screening, because thyroid cancer, for example, is very easy to screen for, but it's not a cancer that you would normally know you have unless it gets really bad. And, you know, we have such a high incidence of thyroid cancer in New Mexico and in those communities down there, and screening is so absolutely necessary for a decent outcome. You know, if we just did some screening, and that's never been done. And so, you know, there are a variety of things that could take place that would make things much, you know, would have a significant impact on the health of the people. But
and
none of that.
And if you did those screenings, then there would be a much higher chance that people would survive kinds of cancers.
And that they wouldn't suffer the way that people suffer. I mean, I know a story of a lady who, you know, found a lump in her breast, and she was very suspicious that it was cancer. But she didn't have insurance, so she went in search of a job where she might get insurance. She found a job like that. She was on probation for 90 days before she could get the insurance. So for about 6 months, she was in the process of trying to find a way to get this evaluated. And by that time, it had metastasized, and she was very sick. And that shouldn't be happening.
No.
That should not be what's happening to people there. And Dennis mentioned something earlier. Radiation exposure causes a change to people's genetics. And that gets passed on from generation to generation. A genetic footprint
so
changes.
You're actually, your sperm and eggs get
right.
Mutant DNA.
Right, exactly. There are changes to DNA, and that gets transferred from one generation to the next. my generation, my father's generation and my generation are the generations that have so far been affected by these long-term effects. The cancer that appears 20 years later. I don't want to discount, though, that certainly after the bomb, within a few years after the bomb, there was a real spike in the number of people who died from cancers. And I think those were more related to being exposed immediately and the resultant health effects. But I guess here's one thing that I just want to stress. We can talk about this, and we can ask the people to, you know, get in touch with your folks in Congress. Tell them that they need to get these bills moving. But we need to tell the story. The story needs to be told. This documentary needs to be made. We in New Mexico have this growing movie industry and production industry. And it would be a shame if people who are listening to us talk today about this, if they know somebody who might have an interest in this, they need to get in touch with Dennis. We need to get this story told. I think New Mexico has to have a conscience about what took place, and then we have to make it a national awareness. This story can't go untold forever.
Right.
You know, there has to be a recognition of what people have given. And you know, I've talked many times about why have we done this in silence for so long? Why have the people just sort of absorbed what it is? You know, why haven't we stood up? Because I have an interesting article that I read in the Reader's Digest years ago, and I clipped it out, and it was about a lady in Idaho who had thyroid cancer. And she lived in a community downwind of the Nevada test sites. And she started the process for making everyone, including her congressional folks, aware of the cancers. And right away, there was recognition of this. And her community and communities in Idaho got included in Eureka. Why can't we make this happen? I mean, we've done so many different things as citizens of that little town, and our organization has done so much work. We've got oral histories. We've recorded oral histories. We've got the health surveys. We've literally turned in hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of petitions signed by people from all over the United States saying we need to get this legislation passed. I don't think any of it's going to really happen until the time that the story gets told.
Yeah.
The way that Dennis wants to tell the story.
And all these oral histories and all these petitions and everything, that goes in the documentary.
Right, and that's one of the things. We can sit here and Tina can talk about the illnesses that she's seen and affected and all these people. But when you actually go down there, down to Tularosa and to Carrizozo, and that is... You know, I went into, I think it's called the New Winds or whatever it is, the Four Winds restaurant in Carrizozo. And I was just mentioning that I'd been out to the Trinity site because it was open. And suddenly the waitresses would start talking about all the illnesses in their families.
Yeah.
And one of them said, you know, there's nobody in Carrizozo who is not either suffering, dying, or dead.
Dennis Carroll is a journalist. His new project is a documentary film called America's Children of the Bomb. You can find out more about it by going to Kickstarter.com, and you can either type in the words America's Children of the Bomb or just simply Dennis Carroll, C-A-R-R-O-L-L. Tina Cordova is a family member of Trinity Test Site survivors from that area. I want to thank you both so much for being with us today on the Radio Cafe.
Can I add one thing? Their contributions are tax deductible.
Yes.
Because we do have a sponsor, a nonprofit sponsor, which is a wonderful organization in Albuquerque called Quote Unquote.
Well, we'll put a link to that on my website as well,
Great.
SantaFeRadioCafe.org. Thank you both for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you for the time.